Before we start, one thing you should know, because it changes how you hear everything that follows. The person you are about to meet is not a person. She is a composite built from more than 20 people who wrote to us describing the same life. And her voice, like mine, is synthesized. Nobody is being quoted. Nobody's story is being told as their own. What is real is the pattern underneath all of them. And that is the only thing here worth your time. You are standing in the center of a room inside the house you are building with your own hands. There is fresh sawdust covering the floorboards. Over in the corner, resting on a sawhorse, is a heavy cardboard box of aviation manuals from your days as a pilot. On your main workbench, there is tray after tray of igneous rock core samples from your years working in geology. And right in the middle of it all, sitting on the steel table of your new table saw, is a massive, pristine bundle of raw, unspun sheep wool and a wooden spindle. You are in your late 60s. You look at the wool, and then you look at the unfinished walls of this house, and a very specific, quiet panic sets in. What is the calculation you are doing in your head right now?
I am doing the math of how many years I have left to live, divided by how many lives I'm trying to live at the exact same time.
It is a brutal piece of division.
It takes the breath right out of my lungs, because the curiosity does not age. My mind feels exactly the way it did when I was 22 years old and deciding to get my pilot license just because I looked up at a small plane and suddenly needed to know how the ailerons functioned. The hunger to know how a thing is put together, how a tapestry is woven, how a foundation is poured, how the ancient Romans managed their aqueducts, that hunger is completely immortal. But my hands are not immortal. My joints ache when it rains, and my time is just bleeding away into the sawdust.
For a long time, the pain was not about running out of time, though. It was about what other people called you.
For 40 years, the pain was just pure shame. I looked at my own life, the teaching degree I walked away from, then the geology work, then the aviation, then the gardening phase, now the house building, and I thought I was simply defective. People were not shy about telling me so either. My family, my former colleagues, they would look at my living room, which has always been a disaster zone of half-finished projects, scattered art supplies, and musical instruments I was teaching myself to play, and they would just sigh. They used words like scattered, flaky, incapable of commitment. They said I was someone who gave up the second things got hard.
And you believe them?
Completely. I internalized every single sigh. I called myself a loser. I would lie awake in bed, surrounded by expensive books on ancient history and a half-built acoustic guitar, and I would just weep because I could not force myself to be like everyone else. I could not understand why I could not just pick one career, one hobby, and ride it out for 40 solid years. I thought I lacked discipline. I thought I was fundamentally broken.
What shifted the math for you? How did you stop calling yourself broken?
I realized that I was not actually failing to finish things. I was just defining the finish line completely differently than everyone else was.
Say more about that. Where is your finish line?
My finish line is understanding. When I bought that raw wool and the spindle, my family rolled their eyes. They asked when they could expect their hand-knit sweaters for Christmas. But I did not buy the wool to make a sweater. I bought it because I suddenly needed to understand the mechanics of spinning fiber into yarn. I needed to feel the tension in my own hands, to understand how human beings did this thousands of years ago. After 3 weeks of clumsy spinning, I figured it out. The mystery was solved. The connection was made in my brain. So I put the spindle down, and I went back to framing the windows on the house. To my family, I had abandoned yet another project. To me, the project was completely finished. The goal was the learning, not the sweater.
You extracted the nectar from the flower and then you flew to the next flower.
Yes, exactly. Once I saw that, the shame just evaporated. I'm not a quitter. I just navigate by curiosity instead of by production. I want to know how the world works in every possible direction.
But the tension is still there in the room with you. You dropped the shame, but you did not drop the weight.
No. The weight is heavier than ever.
Tell me about the weight.
The weight is the physical reality of the room I am standing in. It is the realization that even if I am not broken, even if my way of moving through the world is perfectly fine, I still cannot do it all. I have to make physical choices. And every single time I pick up the wool, I am not building the house. Every time I open a book on Roman architecture, I am not practicing the cello. I used to think that if I just got organized enough, or if I just stopped hating myself, I would miraculously figure out how to do absolutely everything. But the truth is just simple, agonizing physics. The sheer volume of things I want to do is vastly larger than the container of a single human life.
You're looking at the wool on the table saw.
And I am paralyzed by it. Because I know myself. I know that if I start spinning that wool again, I will fall down a massive rabbit hole. I will spend weeks researching historic dyes. I will start looking for local sources of indigo. I will fill my kitchen with giant pots of boiling plants. It will be glorious, and I will feel so incredibly alive. But the house will sit here, unfinished. The winter will come, and my kids will come over to visit, and they will walk into the house, step over the sawdust, look at the pots of indigo dye on the stove, and they will give each other that look.
That look.
The look that says, "There she goes again. Mom is off on another wild tangent. Why can she not just focus and put a roof over her head?" And it lands right in my chest every time. I want to sit here and tell you that I am completely at peace, that I do not care what anyone thinks anymore. And most days, I really do not. I love my mind. I love that I can look out the window at a landscape and understand the geological strata beneath the dirt, and then look up at the sky and know the weather patterns from my flying days, and then look down at the plants and know what fibers can be woven. I feel so rich. But I am so desperately tired of being untranslatable to the people I love.
You want them to see what you see.
I want them to walk into this half-built house, look at the geology trays and the aviation charts and the wool and the sawdust, and not see a mess. I want them to see a tapestry. I want them to look at my life and say, "Oh, we see what you are doing. We see how all of these threads connect to each other. We see that you are building a magnificent, sprawling understanding of the universe." I want them to be in awe of it just a little bit, instead of being completely bewildered by it. I am not a museum of failures. I am a living, breathing laboratory. But nobody wants to visit a laboratory. They want to sit on a comfortable couch in a finished living room. And I am never going to give them a finished living room. Because there's always another question to ask.
Always. Right now, I'm looking at the sawdust on the floorboards, and I'm wondering about the cellular structure of the wood. I'm wondering how the tree drew water up from the ground to the highest leaves. I have a massive book on botany in the other room. I could go get it right now. But if I do, I will not cut the trim for the windows today. And the cold air will come in tonight. It is the grief of the unlived lives. Every choice you make is a small death, a tiny funeral every single hour of the day. If I choose the wood, the wool dies. If I choose the wood dies. And I have to stand here as a woman in her late 60s and officiate all of these funerals. I have to look at all these beautiful, fascinating things and tell almost all of them no. I have to let the possibilities go dark just so I can get one physical thing done. It breaks my heart. It really does. I mourn the things I will never learn. I mourn the ancient languages I will never speak, the musical instruments I will never play, the crafts I will never master. You are carrying the sorrow of an infinite appetite trapped inside a finite vessel. That is exactly what it is, and no amount of self-acceptance changes the size of the vessel. I have stopped beating myself up for being hungry, but the hunger does not fit in the time I have left. The burden is not that you lack focus. The burden is recognizing that the world is endlessly rich, and the sun simply goes down too fast.